Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Samach Gimel and Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, "Homer harei alei machavat lo yavi b'marcheshet, b'marcheshet lo yavi b'machavat." So here the Mishnah is discussing two out of the five minachot that we know as the minchat nidava that are found in Vayikra Bet. You know that there are five there. There's the minchat solet, there's the minchat machavat, minchat marcheshet, and minchat ma'afet tanur, which comes in two manifestations. One is chalot and one is rikikim. So those are the five options that you have. Over here, this individual pledged to bring a machavat, then he should not bring a marcheshet. If he pledged to bring a marcheshet, he shouldn't bring a machavat. Ma ben machavat de marcheshet. What's the difference in terms of a mincha between a machavat and marcheshet? Marcheshet, yesh la kisui. Marcheshet has a cover to it. Machavat, ein la kisui. On the other hand, a machavat does not have a cover. Divrei Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says that the key difference between them is not the size of the pot, the size of the pan that is used, rather whether it's covered or uncovered. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel omer, marcheshet amuka, umaseha, rochashim. There is an alternate gear, so you can see over here, which is rakim. And then machavat, tzafa, umaseha, kashim. It is shallow, and therefore it is hard. So the marcheshet is a deep fry, deep pot, that has oil in it, and then it creates this deep fry. Maseha rochoshim is that it moves, as Rashi says over here, that it shakes. Now, what shakes is the question. Does it naturally shake because it's so much oil that is absorbed into the mincha? So it just shudders by itself because of the amount of oil in there. Or Rashi says over here, when you touch it, it moves or shakes because of the oil that's in it. I mean, it squeezes some of that oil out. And still others say that the actual cooking process itself causes that shuddering or causes that movement because of the deep frying that's going on with the dough. Now, there is also the alternative that is maseh rakim. So that again can be one of two ways. Rakaka just means soft because there's oil, a ton of oil inside the dough. So the dough is a softer dough. Or it could be maseh rakim is that we have a concept in the Gemara and Shabbat of blila raka and blila ava. And it might have to do with the mixture, the type of liquidy nature of the dough, so that the more liquidy the dough, then you need a container to hold it, or a pot to hold it. So here, by the marcheshet, where it's a deep pot, you can have a more liquidy dough, because there's something to contain it. On the other hand, the machavat, given the other side of this, is a shallow pan, and so you can't have a liquidy dough, because it'll overflow the sides. You need something that has more viscosity to it, something that is harder, and therefore that blila is not blila raka, it's a blila ava, it's a thicker dough, so it doesn't move when it's inside the frying pan. The alternative of machavat is tzafa. It's very shallow, so there's going to be less oil in there. Because it's a shallow pan, it's going to be across the top. And then the oil will burn off quickly, and when it burns off quickly, it's going to cause the dough to harden, and you're going to get more of a crispier dough because of the burning off of the oil, then it stays on the fire. And then that does it crispier, makes it harden. But the nature, what you're noting is correct, which is that that which goes into the marcheshet is going to be more rounded. It's going to be a thicker type of dough, almost equivalent to a donut of sorts. And the machavat is going to give you a much thinner, whether it's wafer-like or whether it's pancake-like, you're going to get a much thinner surface type of item. So that's the difference between them, according to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Now, the Gemara says, my time is the Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi Aglili's position, where does he get this idea that there's a cover or not a cover related to marcheshet and machavat? Ilema marcheshet, da'atya arechushe aleiv. The reason that it's called a marcheshet, it becomes to be mechaper, it comes to deal with the thoughts of the heart. So that is something that is, we'll call it an aveirav machshava. So he's bringing that to atone for the thoughts of his heart. And the thoughts are something that are secret. Those are things that are not out in the public domain. Kirichtiv, like it says, Rachash libi davar tov. My heart was stirred by the good news. Rachash, to mean to stir or to move, and that's where the reference to the heart. And the heart to something that's covered. And therefore, you're going to have a cover on the minchat marcheshet. Umachavat da'atya amach be'uyi hapeh. So that comes from the voice or the loud noise that one makes. So here it's a reference to rechilut, to someone who goes around and chit-chatters. The Amre Inche, like people say, minabeach nivuche. Or you can see that there's an alternate girsa in the Shita Mikubetzet, which is mabach buche. So that means the English word for it is prating, which is like idle chatter, a loud or dull sound, or a bark. That's what the Gemara uses the word nevuche for. In other places, it's the bark of the dog. But either way, it means something that is out in the open, something that's in the public domain. So that's something that's not covered. So that's the reason that you wouldn't have a cover on the machavat. So that's the Gemara speculating as the source of Rabbi Yossi HaGlili. But the problem with that is, ema ipcha. Why don't we say just the opposite? Machvat acha amachbo'e halev. That comes on the things that are hidden in the heart. Dichtiv, lamanach beta libroach. That's what Lavan says to Yaakov. Why did you sneak away? Why did you run off in that way? But that was in a manner in which he was deceptively leaving, and he didn't inform Lavan about the fact that he is leaving. So that again would be something that's hidden. Marcheshet acha arachushe. That comes from something that moves, which is kedamrei inche havi marachashan siftute. That is, the lips were quivering. So again, that would be something that is open or visible, which is the quivering or the movement. So then you have just the opposite conclusion as to which one would be covered and which one would be open. Ela gemara gemirila. It is a mesora. That was the mesora that he had. It's not a logical argument. It doesn't come from the definition of the words. Simply, that was the mesora that he had, that the marcheshet was covered and the machavat was uncovered. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel omer, marcheshet amuka. So there you know that the marcheshet is amuka. Dichtiv b'chol anaseh b'marcheshet. So the terminology that's used in Parshat Tzav to describe the marcheshet is kol menchashet te'afeh b'tanur, b'chol nasah b'marcheshet v'al machavat, l'koin amkiboto lo tiyeh. In the description of the menachot that are brought there, it says v'chol anaseh b'marcheshet, means internally or inside the marcheshet. Whereas it says machavat tzafa, on the other hand, machavat is floating or is on the surface, dichtiv, v'al machavat, and on the machavat. So over there you have certain things that are made internally, and other things that are made on the surface of the machavat. So the change in the preposition between ba marcheshet to al machavat is what's driving this difference. Ba marcheshet means that it's deep inside, and that's why it's a deep pot. Al means it's floating on the surface. Exactly. The word that's used is a griddle that does run you into some problems because then you don't have a toch. You don't have an internal side to the kli. And in general, for things like the kli sharet and for Tuma and the same kli, you need a toch. You need an internal side to it. And so a griddle, which this is what the machavat sounds like, you have, might have to have a thin rim around it or something around it. Although there are those that want to argue, which we know from Masechet Kelim, flat metal Kelim, or Mekabel Tuma, and they do have a same kli to them. It's a unique side of metal. And again, we'll get to it later on in the Masechta with regards to the Shulchan Apanim, as to whether something that is flat can serve as the shulchan or the kelim that hold the lechem apanim. Tarbanan, Beit Shammai omrim, Homer haray alai marcheshet, yehei munach ad shivo Eliyahu. Someone who takes a neder that responsible to bring a marcheshet, we leave that to be fulfilled until Eliyahu comes. Misapkuluhu, they are uncertain. Yel shum kli nikru, is that because of the utensil? O al shum ma'asehen, or is it the way that it's done? So if you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he explains that the safek is the following. That first of all, it's not unique to marcheshet, v'adin machavat. If you said harei alai machavat, it would be no different than saying harei alai marcheshet. The question is, if he's speaking about a keli, if he's speaking about the utensil, then we'd clearly know what he was speaking about, because there's a utensil called a marcheshet, and there's a utensil called a machavat. If he pledged to bring a mincha that's brought in a marcheshet, then we know what to do. If we pledge to bring a mincha in a machavat, we know what keli to use in the mikdash. The problem is we don't know what he meant when he said arei alei marcheshet. Did he mean to bring it in that kli? Or did he mean that I want it to be mechaper al rechushei? And there we saw in the Gemara that there were two definitions. And that's what the Rabbeinu Gershom notes. That is it because it's the shem kli, ve'ein bo sveika, or al shem ma'asehem? Nikru, dai ate, that this comes to be mechaper al rechushei alev, v'hayamach bui apeh. And this for those things that are expressed through the mouth, And we saw that in the Gemara, you could have explained it just the opposite. And therefore he doesn't know what to bring. So again, there's two levels of safek. There's one level of safek as to whether he's speaking about a kli or whether he's speaking about maaseh. If he was speaking about a kli, then we wouldn't have any question. But once he's speaking about maaseh also, then we have a problem because we don't know what to bring. Tosfot, on the other hand, brings this shito that the Rabbeinu Gershom says in the name of Perish HaKuntris, in the name of Rashi. Our Rashi does not have that explanation. Our Rashi's explanation is identical to that which Tosfot gives over here. And that is the safek is actually much more basic. The safek is, did you pledge to bring a kli, or did you pledge to bring a mincha? When a person says, Harei Alei Marcheshet, is Marcheshet defined as the utensil by which you use or you make these things in a mikdash, and therefore it is a noun, or is it Harei Alei Marcheshet is the maseh, the action or activity by which you create a Marcheshet? And so the safek is, did you pledge to bring a kli, to donate the kli on marcheshet to the mikdash, or did you pledge to donate a mincha marcheshet to the mikdash, a mincha that's processed as a marcheshet? So again, is it a noun? And that means that you're pledging to bring such a kli in the mikdash and donate it to the mikdash, or is it a verb that you want a mincha that is processed in the marcheshet manner? And then that would be a mincha. So for the Balei Tosfot and Rashi, if you simply said, Harei Alai Minchat Marcheshet, Harei Alai Minchat Machabat, you'd actually solve the problem. Because then you know that you wanted to bring a mincha, you didn't want to bring the kli. On the other hand, for the Rabbeinu Gershom, and again, what Tosfot quotes in the name of Perish HaKuntris, even if you said Harei Alai Minchat Machabat, or Harei Alai Minchat Marcheshet, the same safek would still exist, which is, we don't know when you say a mincha marcheshet, what does that mean? Does that mean that you're bringing it for Rechushe Alev, or you're bringing that for Rechushe Apeh? And so therefore the same safek still exists, even if you define the mincha. It just happens to be a double level safek when you don't define it as a mincha, you just say Harei Alai Marcheshet, Harei Alai Machabat. So that's the two different ways to explain this Gemara, or the safek that we have within Beit Shammai. The Shita Mikubetza does bring a third explanation of this Gemara, which is very interesting. The Shita Mikubetza actually makes the point that the Rabbeinu Gershom's interpretation, as well as the Tosafot and Rashi's explanation, all could have said Harei Alai Machabat and had the same safek. And the Rabbeinu Gershom himself says that that's the case. And the Shita Mikubetza is bothered by that because the example that's brought by Beit Shammai is only Harei Alai Marcheshet. And he sees in that the problem of the safek. And therefore he says, Lekach Nira Lefaresh, Iyal Kelyan Shaya B'Mikdash, in the Kelim of the Mikdash, Kli Shishmo Marcheshet, Nadar La'vi B'Marcheshet. He says, Harei Alai Marcheshet, there was a Kli, a utensil in the Mikdash that was called a Marcheshet. And that's what he means when he takes a neder to bring him in Chat Marcheshet. He means to use that Kli that's called a Marcheshet in the Mikdash. Odilma Loi B'Mikdash Ki Im Machavat. Or maybe in the Mikdash there was only a single kli called a machavat. Begam minchat marcheshet haya useh b'machavat. And a minchat marcheshet you also used to process in the machavat. Rak shaya mema'it ba'ur. It just had a lower flame. Achyu maseh rochashim. And that the lower flame caused it that it heated more slowly. And therefore it was a different form of frying than doing it under a much heavier flame. That it caused the oil to heat without it becoming furious, without it becoming more agitated. Whereas, if you did it with a higher flame, then it would cause the oil to bubble over. And so therefore, Beit Shammai are uncertain as to whether the Marcheshet means there was a unique kli in the Mikdash called Marcheshet, and that's what it means. Or there was only one kli from an Akot in the Mikdash that was called a Machavat. How you made it into a marcheshet or machavat had to do with how high a flame you used. If you used a low flame, you ended up with a marcheshet. If you used a high flame, you ended up with a machavat. So their safek is, does it mean there was a kli marcheshet, and that's what it means to process a minchat marcheshet? Or does it mean make a minchat marcheshet in a machavat? And that uncertainty leaves them saying that you have to wait until the Yehu Nevi comes in order to solve this problem. And he brings evidence to this explanation from Torat Kohanim, where Beit Hillel's response to Beit Shammai is the following. Nemar Tanur, B'nimer marcheshet. The word tanur is used as well as marcheshet. Just like the word tanur is a noun meaning an oven, so too marcheshet is a kli, a utensil. Ah, so Tosafot asks your question. Says, why isn't the solution over here just to bring both of them, which is what we do in other questions when we have a safek? We say, okay, we're going to bring both of them in order to discharge the obligation. So let's do the same thing over here. So he says, Yesh lamayr, the mayr could go into ma'ot alalu, osula zele marcheshet. He dedicated the particular monies or the particular flour for that mincha. And so then you have to use that item for that particular mincha. You can't just bring something from the outside. Even so, he says you can still do it in a way where you purchase both of them. And you say, whichever one is the one that I was no there, that will be purchased with that money. And the other one won't. So he says, Yesh lamayr, go and shave vish ma'ot v'gdisham lemarcheshet. He dedicated it saying that this money will be used based on how the linguists define what the word marcheshet is. The problem is we don't know how to define the word the marcheshet, and therefore you're left in this bind or this safek. So that's how the Balei Tosafot try to deal with your question, is that usually we can deal with safekot. Over here we don't deal with the safek because he put himself in a corner where he can't use the solutions that we have in other cases of safek. Alright, so Beit Hillel Omrim, Kli Haya B'Mikdash, U'Marcheshet Shema. There was a utensil in the Mikdash, it was called a Marcheshet. V'Dome Kemin Kalbos Amok, Shebatzei Kunach B'Tocho, and it was like a Kalbos. Dome Kemin Tapuchei HaBratim, it's like the apples from Crete, or the Cretan apples. U'Kmin Balutei, or Balvutei HaYivanim, and like the nuts of the Greeks. And Rashi over here says that they're not regular nuts. They're actually gall nuts because they come from the alone. They come from the oak tree. And that's the shape of the dough after it's put inside. So there's much machloket amongst the Rishonim as to exactly what the nature of this utensil was. You can see here in the Masorah Shas that he brings from what's the Oruch Perish Kli Agabe Shlosh Regalim, was something that stood on three legs or on a tripod of sorts. And then he brings the definition of Tabukhei Bratim, means that it was just circular in nature, Chutz Mimakom HaKinus, with the exception of the area where it went in. And that seems to be what's being depicted if you look in their Beinu Gershom, who also brings this idea. He shows you the shape of the item, and he says that it was a Kli Amok, and that it was thick walls, except for the area where it entered, or where you put it in. And that's what he draws over there, that Samach, or Mem Sofit, which has circular around and its thick walls, except for the area where it seems to be that was the entry, or where you poured in the dough to that area. And then Rashi seems to be picturing over here something round that has internal walls on it. So the dough sits in those depressions that are inside of the pan, whether that means that it was a shallower pan than we thought, it just that it has shape to it. Or does it mean that it's a deep pan and they have separate locations where they put it in? So it seemed to me it was a deep pot or pan, but then they had these circles that were at the bottom or shapes at the bottom so that the dough, when it sat in the oil deep in the pot, that it actually used a shape to that and turned it to a circle or these shapes that we're describing over here. And then you can see the sheet of Mikubetz that brings a picture of a U and shows that there was a centerpiece that is solid. There's walls around the outside, and the dough sits along that edge on the outside. And also that created some sort of shaping, so that it was rounded all around, but except for Makom HaKinus, it's a horseshoe. So again, that's a similar type of pan that was maybe being described by the Aruch, although there are others who describe it as a pan that had Melkechayim, that had tongs that were attached to the wall, and those tongs held the dough in place while it cooked or it fried inside of the oil. So you have all different opinions about what it is. Most of it seems to be over here focused on the shaping of the dough, but it's clear that Beit Hillel says that we know there was a kli, and this was the type of kli that it is, and they proved that v'omer, v'chol naseh b'marcheshet v'amachavat. The fact that it says that anything that's made in a marcheshet and on a machavat shows you that it's not a process, but rather a kli. Alma shum kelim nikru v'lo shum asehem. It's clear here that we're speaking about a utensil, and we're not speaking about an action or an activity that's being done. Therefore, it is a kli. And if it is a kli, that means that he intended to bring a mincha in that kli. There's no question about what he means. And the kli we have defined here based on the descriptors that were given, although to us it's not clear. Obviously the Gemara felt that it was clear. The Rishonim are struggling with what exactly that means. So here you have a number of options as to what the nature of the utensil is. They all seem to agree that you get something round afterwards. You get a ball of dough afterwards. All right, so the next Mishnah, Harei Alai B'Tanur. So this is the other Nidava, Minchat Nidava, which is Me'afe Tanur. So he says, Harei Alai B'Tanur, Lo Yavi Me'afe Kupach. You should not bring something that's baked or cooked on a kupach. A kupach is a stove with only one place for something to put on it, instead of a tanur, which is an oven. Lo Me'afe Ra'afim, not something that is baked on tiles, hot tiles, or Me'afe Yorot, Ta'arabayim, the Arabian fireplaces. So these are all different methods for making the dough, or making like we call the pitot. And the tanur is the one that we want to use, the baking, and not these other methods of making bread, which you can see today when you go to some of these workshops. They have these upside down pans where you heat up the pan and then they put the dough on top of it, make the dough. That's not what we're referring to. We're referring to something that's baked inside of the oven. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ratza mevi ma'afe kupach. You're allowed to bring something that's made on a kupach. Let's see why that is. Harei alei minchat me'afe, lo yavi mekza chalot u'mekza rikikim. If you want to bring a me'afe tanur, you can't bring 50% chalot, 50% rikikim. You got to be either all chalot or all rikikim. You have a choice, but you have to make that choice. Rabbi Shimon Matir, Rene Shul Kurban Echad, says you can do it. It's one considered to be one Kurban, and therefore you can mix and match. You can put together some rikikim, some chalot, and that'll be fine. Tanur banan, me'afe tanur, velo me'afe kupach, velo me'afe re'afim, velo me'afe yorot arabayim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, tanur, tanur, shnei pe'amim. The word tanur appears twice, lachshir me'afe kupach, to tell you that there are two types of ovens, quote-unquote, that you're allowed to use. One of them is found in Parshat Tzav, which is the one that we read before. It says, V'chol mincha sher te'afe b'tanur, V'chol ha'na'asa b'marcheshet av'machavad ha'koinim ha'pivota lo t'yeh. That's asher te'afe b'tanur. And then in Perek Bet, in Vayikra, you have the original, which is, V'chit ha'piv kurban mincha ma'afe tanur, solid kolot matzot belot b'shemen u'kikei matzot m'shuchim b'shemen. Says the word tanur is used twice, and therefore you have the option to use different types of tanurim. You have an option to use a tanur, which is a regular oven. You have an option to use a tanur, quote unquote, which is a kupach, which is a much smaller, really like a stovetop type of heating element, and you can use that as well. Rabbi Shimon Omer, tanur, tanur, shnei pe'amim. The reason you have two times that the word tanur is mentioned is to tell you the process by which it's done. One of them tells you that it must be baked inside of the oven. The other one tells you that that is what is sanctifying the mincha over here, is the oven. Does Rabbi Shimon really think that way? That's not. We have a mission that's coming up. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Lola Meiver Agil Omer, Shtei lechem, v'lechem panim kshirot ba'azara, u'kshirot b'beit paget. That they are kosher both in the azara and a beit paget, which was outside of the area of the azara. It's chutz l'chomot ha'azara, as Rashi says over here. If you think that the tanur, the mikdash, is mikdash items, then the lechem panim and the shtei lechem are made in the oven of the mikdash. They should already be in mikudash. You can't take them outside the chomot ha'azara. They'll be limited because they are kodshei kodashim. Some they can't be removed, and once they are sanctified, then they would be pasul biyotze if you took them outside the walls of the Azara. The fact that Rabbi Shimon says you can take them out shows you that the tanur is not mikadesh them. The Shita Mekubetz in Ot Chav Zayin points out that we learned earlier in the Masechta, and Tosafot also references you to this on Daf Tet Amud Aleph, that they believe that when it comes to the Kiddush Shakli, that is not posel biyotze. Rashi sounds like from here that if it was nitkadesh yadei kli, it would be pasul biyotze. And that's the whole problem over here. If you can take it out to Beit Pagi, that's an indication that the tanur is not mikadesh. But Tosafot says it's just not true. Even if it was kodesh b'kdushat kli, it would still not be pasul biyotze. And therefore, the Tosafot back on Tanur Aleph and the Shita Mekubetz over here with a slight nuance says that the truth is that you could take it out. It wouldn't be pasul biyotze. It is, as the Tosafot on Tanur Aleph says, a gnai to hektesh to take it out. Shin Megmetzer over here says it's a gnai to bake it out there. It doesn't make so much sense because they already baked it in the tanur, so why would you be taking it to bake it out there? Although that might be akin to what Rashi says later on in the Masecht on Daf Tzadi Hey on Bet, where Rashi in the Mishnah about Beit Pagi says that's the proof from Beit Pagi that Rabbi Shimon brings is the fact that you're allowed to bake it out in Beit Pagi. But that really is a different issue than whether it's pasul biyotze. And Tosfot just says that it would be inappropriate to take it out there, but not that it would be pasul biyotze. That's what the Gemara is teaching us over here. So Amarava, Ema, Shehei Hekdesham Lashum Tanur. That when the person brings them, he has to sanctify them with the intent that he's going to bake them in a tanur. So there's two requirements. One requirement is to actually bake them in the tanur. The other requirement is that you sanctify it. When you mekadesh it with the intent to do it inside of a tanur. So those are the two steps that Rabbi Shimon requires. But that's why he says the word tanur appears twice to tell you not that you can use different types, quote unquote, of ovens, but rather one oven and one that you have to sanctify the shemen oven. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda sees that as an opening, that if you have two tanurim, that means one tanur means a regular tanur. The other tanur opens up the possibility of using a kupach, or you could say that it's Rashi notes over here, vein ribuya charibuya lemaet. And therefore, it tells you that you don't have to use a tanur, in essence. The fact that it says tanur twice gives you the opposite effect, which is now that you don't have to use a tanur, you can use something else that simulates the effect of a tanur, and that'll be a kupach. So that's the way Rashi defines it, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Arei alai mincha me'afeh. Lo yavi mechza. So this is the machloket as to whether you can bring it as half and half, or you have to bring it as a whole. Tan Rabbanan. V'chi takriv. It says here, if you bring a mincha, chi kariv makorman mincha ma'afet tanur, shetakriv, or the way the Masorah Shas has it is, kishit tirtze. When you come forward, when you voluntarily come to do something like this, that's what it means, v'chi takriv. Lasot davar. Rishot. Optional. Voluntary. It's not compelled. You can decide whether you want to bring it. But once you bring it, korban mincha. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda, minayin omer, harei alai minchat ma'afeh, shalo yavi mechza chalot u mechza rikikim. Tamad lomar, korban mincha. Korban echad amarti decha, halo shnayim u shlosha korbanot. The drush is, you get to choose when you want to bring it. It's voluntary. So now you bring the mincha, it has to be a korban mincha. It has to be a single korban mincha. So if you mix chalot and rikikim, you don't have a single korban. You have multiple korbanot then, and that's what precludes you from splitting it into chalot and rikikim. Amar lo Rabbi Shimon, v'chein emar korban, korban, shnei pe'amim. He says that's not what it says. It doesn't say korban twice. El alo lo ne'emar lo korban echad. It only says the word korban echad, and then it goes on to define what that korban echad is, which is ne'emar bar chalot or rikikim. He points out that the pasuk finishes after saying korban mincha. It says v'chein takriv korban mincha. So it's almost as if it has a colon there. It's saying you want to bring a mincha, korban mincha me'afet tanur, colon, and then it tells you there's chalot and rikikim. But it still only calls it a korban echad. That means that even if you bring from both the chalot and the rikikim, it still will only be defined as a korban echad. So therefore, me'ata, never ratzala avi chalot, maybe. Rikikim, maybe. You want to bring chalot? More power to you. Rikikim, you do whatever you want. Mechza chalot, mechza rikikim, maybe. That's your choice. Now, how do you deal with them if you bring them as a mixed bunch? Maybe you bring some rikikim, some chalot. Then you bololan. You mix them together. Now, the nature of the korban over here, the ma'afet tanur, is obviously it's baked before you take off the komets, which makes it much more difficult to take off a komets. When you're speaking about something that's a raw dough, or you're talking about something that's mixed with oil and water, that to take off a komets is easier. But if you have something that is already baked, it's a solid item. How do you take a komets off of it? So there's a requirement of a patoto ta pititim. You have to actually then crumble it back into the equivalent of what is almost like a flour again. So you baked it, and then you're going to powderize it afterwards by folding it over and folding it over until you get small pieces. So that patoto ta pititim allows you to take the komets off. But that also allows you the bololan to mix them together. That the rikikim and the chalot will be mixed together, and therefore bekometz mishnehem, and therefore you take off a kometz from both of them together. Vim kamatz v'alav yado me'achad al shnehem yatsa. If by chance when you were doing the kometz, it only ended up getting a kometz that is represented by one of the two types, that's fine because you mixed them together. You went and you took off a kometz; they're considered to be a single item now. So whatever comes out, comes out. doesn't have to be a statistical sample of what you have inside, just whatever you come out, whatever comments you get, that's sufficient because it's a singular unit. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Minayin Omer, Harei Alayim Minchat Ma'afeh, Shelo Yavi Mechza Chalot Mechza Rikikim. So how do you know that you can't do that? Tamal Omer, V'chol Mincha Asher Te'afeh B'Tanur, V'chol Naseh B'Mar Cheshet V'Al Machavat, the Kohen HaMakriv Ota Lo Tiyeh. That's the pasuk that we quoted before again from Tzav. And then the pasuk continues, it says, V'chol Mincha B'Lulav HaShemen V'Chareva, V'chol B'nei Aron Tiyeh Ish Ke'achiv. Ma V'chol Amur L'mata Shnei Minim Chalukim. Over there it's clear that you're dealing with two different types of Mincha. V'chol Amur L'mala Shnei Minim Chalukim. So too, the one that's mentioned above is also two different Minim. They're completely separate korbanot. So here you have a list of menachot.
So just like by the latter parts of the psukim, where it says, v'chol mincha b'lulav ha-shemen v'chareiva, it means two different menachot. And similarly, when it says, v'chol naseh b'mar cheshev v'alamachavat, means two totally separate menachot. So too, v'chol mincha asher te'afeh v'tanur is a reference to two separate menachot, meaning the chalot and rikikim are two totally separate menachot.
Rabbi Yehuda Shapir Kamar Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon's claim against Rabbi Yehuda is pretty strong. It doesn't say Korban twice. It only says the word Korban once. If it says it once, it sounds like you can comprise a single mincha from the chalot and from the rikikim. So Amalachas, Rabbi Yehuda responds, Kevin Dikhtib Bashemen Bashemen, Kvan Dikhtib Korban Korban Dami. Since it writes Bashemen twice in the pasuk, once associated with chalot, once associated with rikikim, it's equivalent of if the word Korban in the front is referencing to a Korban Bashemen and a Korban Bashemen, or you have two different menachot. Rabbi Shimon, so what does Rabbi Shimon do with Bashemen, Bashemen? Why doesn't he just write it once? Ilokti Bashem, Bashemen, Abimina Davka Mechza Chalot to Mechza Rikikim. Had you not done that, you would have been compelled to bring 50% Chalot, 50% Rikikim. Aval Chalot Luchudai, Rikikim Luchudai, Flame Alone, but doing each one independently would not have been permissible. Kamash Malan, Bashemen, Bashemen, to teach you that each, you can bring it in one of three manners. You can bring it all chalot, all rikikim, or 50-50 chalot rikikim. That's because the word korban only appears once for Rabbi Shimon, but Bashem Bashemen gives the option to do either or both together. For Rabbi Yehuda, he says Bashem Bashem makes the equivalent as if the word korban is written twice. They're each separate entities completely. They can't overlap or they cannot be brought together. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Haino Abua. That's his father. Rabbi Yehuda's shita is that you can only bring either chalot or rikikim. And Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda seems to indicate something similar, that you can only bring chalot or rikikim, you can't bring both. So what's the difference between Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda and his father? Igamenayu diavad. Question is, if you do it b'diavad, what's the story? And as Rashi notes over here, Rabbi Yehuda, the lalif taima mi kurban echad, he learns it out of the word kurban, diavad, sherot, b'diavad, it's okay. But Rabbi Yossi, who learns it out from blula v'chareva, so there, you can't mix them up. A blula that you bring as a chareva, or a chareva that you bring as a blula, is pasul de gamre. And so since he's using a definition that fits two cases where, if you switch them around, they'd be pasul, so to over here, the chalot and rikikim, you mix them up, they're going to be pasul. The Rabbeinu Gershom over here just formulates it a little differently and says, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, afilu diabed nami lo. He's the one who says that the diabed is pasul. The chotana batra, le'atfuye milta ka'ati. The Tana Batra, the later Tana, obviously Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda is later than his father, always comes to be additive. And so over here, he must be the one that is posel more than his father, and that's why he says, afilu b'diavad. Although the Karen Ora over here makes it clear that this is only true if he made a specific neder to bring a mafet tanur that's mixed of chalot to rikikim. If he doesn't say that, then even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that b'diavad is pasul, because otherwise, how can you mix the different types according to Rabbi Yehuda, when they're totally separate entities or separate types of menachot. And so therefore he says that the only time Rabbi Yehuda would be matir is if he specified that he was going to bring it from chalot and rikikim. Alright, with that we finish the fifth perek, hadran alach, kol ha-menachot. And now, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Omer hayaba b'shabbat mishalosh sa'in u'b'chol mechamesh. So when it comes to the bringing of the Kurban Omer, the Minchat Omer, first of all, we know it comes from se'or, it comes from barley. And then you have to mill the barley into fine flour. It's going to be solet that's made out of barley, which is not so easy because barley in general is a coarser grain and creates a coarser flour. So to get solet that's made from barley is not so easy. Therefore, you have to use a much higher quantity than the result that you want in the end. And so he says that on Shabbat you bring from 3 sa'ah, ubechol, on a weekday you bring from 5 sa'ah. V'chamim omim echad Shabbat ve'echad chol, we don't differentiate between Shabbat and chol, mishalosh ayaba. It's brought from 3 sa'ah, whether you do it on a chol or whether you do it on a weekday. V'chinin eskan ha'gonim omer b'shabbat ye nikzar b'yachid, umumagal echad, umekubah echad. He says that when they did it on Shabbat, an individual used to go and cut, harvest the barley that you needed. That had to be done the night before. You had to harvest the barley, and then you brought it, processed it in the Mikdash, and then you brought the Omer on the next morning. Uba magalachat, you only use one side, and uba kubachat, and one basket, meaning that minimize the amount of people and the Chilul Shabbat that's taking place. Uba chol b'shlosha. On a weekday, you used to do it with 3 individuals. B'shalosh kupol, 3 baskets, u'shmosh magalot, and 3 sides. That obviously is to publicize it or have much more pomp and circumstance surrounding it. Chamim amim, echad shabbat v'echad chol, b'shlosha, then you have 3 people, shlosh kupol, shlosh magalot. Magalot, you don't change the nature of the korban ha'omer on Shabbat from chol. And as we'll see later on, the Rashi notes over here, the reason the Chachamim wanted to be with pomp and circumstance on Shabbat is to defy the position of the Beit Yisim and Tzdukim, who believe that it had to be Merachat Shabbat, it always had to be on a Sunday, and it was not Dochet Shabbat. So Bishlamal Rabbonon Kasabre, the Rabbonon clearly hold Isaron Mufchar Mishlosha Sein, so that you get a Isaron, that is a fine flour, if you start out with 3 Sa'ah. So 3 Sa'ah is the equivalent of an Eifa. An Eifa is the measurement by which they define an Isaron, which is Asirit Ha'Eifa. Isaron is 1/10 of an Eifa. 3 Sa'ah is the equivalent of an Eifa. If you start out with 3 Sa'ah, you're starting out with an Eifa, and then you're whittling it down and milling it down till you get a fine flour of an Isaron, which means 1/10. 10% of what you mill will end up being fine flour, and that's what you're using over here. They think that 3 Sa'ah will produce the Isaron that you're looking for. Veloshna b'chol, veloshna b'shabbat. Makes no difference if it's chol or Shabbat. This is the ratio that you need. You start out with 3 sa'ah, you can end up with an isaron, a fine barley flour. Ela Rabbi Shmuel, my kasavar. Rabbi Shmuel changes the din between Shabbat and chol. What's his thought? Ikasavar isaron mufchar lo atyele mechamesh. If he thinks you can only get a isaron, a fine flour, by starting out with 5 sa'ah, then afilu b'shabbat nami. Then on Shabbat also you should have to start with 5 sa'ah, because that's what you need in the end. Irrespective of what day of the week it is, you need that to be the end product. If that's what it takes, then you should do the same thing on Shabbat. If he thinks that you can create that fine flour from 3, afilu b'chol nami, then on a weekday also you should do 3. Why would you process 5? So amarova kasav Rabbi Shmuel isaron mufkar below tircha atimechamesh. Without a lot of effort or extra effort, in an easier manner, produce the fine flour from 5. Obviously, the larger quantity that you start with, the easier it will be to get that fine flour. It produces, each time you mill a certain amount of the barley grain, by definition, there is a certain amount of fine flour that's there. So if you do a larger quantity, you'll get your isaron easily without having to do much extra work. On the other hand, b'tircha, if you make extra effort and you process it and you mill it really well, and you have to do addition, more sifting and more sorting along the way, then ati mashalosh. So therefore, you can get it from 3. So b'chol ma'tina mi'chamesh, da'chashvicha milta. So on a weekday, you bring it from 5, because that is a more, both, let's say, pleasant, easier, and complementary way to make it, because first of all, you're going to get the finest of flour, because you're starting with a larger quantity, and therefore, when you sift it down, whatever you get or whatever the result is definitely going to be the finest flour. And beyond that, you're dealing with what we say that ein aniyut b'makom ashirut. When we deal with the Mikdash and processing for Hashem, we don't skimp. So we bring in 5 sa'ah and we get the stuff that we need. B'Shabbat, mutav shirbeh b'melacha achat b'harkadah v'yirbeh b'melachot harbeh. Better to have excess of one melacha than to violate multiple melachot multiple times. So again, if you process more wheat, in the processing of the wheat, you violate Shabbat in a number of ways. Let's just start with the harvesting. You have to cut it. You have to do the dash. Then you have to do zarei la ruach. You have the threshing, the winnowing of it. Borer, the tfina, the harkadah, there are all these different processes. So when you go through that, if you do a higher quantity, within each malacha, you're increasing the amount of that malacha that you're doing. On the other hand, if you just start out with a smaller quantity, and then you do more harkadah, you do more sifting, so it'll take more sifting and more work in the sifting, but that's only in one malacha that you'll do more. We'd rather that you increase the tircha and reduce the number of malachot that are violated. So Amar Rabba, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yoshmel, Benosha, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Amru Dabar Achad. We find a similar position with regards to another Rabbi Shmuel. That's Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. They say the same thing. The Tanya, Arbasar Shechaliot B'Shabbat. If the 14th of Nisan, that is Erev Pesach, when you're going to bring the Korban on Pesach, that falls out on Shabbat, Mavshita the Pesach Adachazeh. You flay the skin until you reach the chest. Divrei Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. That's it. Because if you flay the whole animal, then that's unnecessary on Shabbat. The only thing you need on Shabbat is to get to the innards, to get to the fats that you need to put on the Mizbeach. So if you just cut up to the Chazeh, then you'll get what you need. You've facilitated what you need over here. We don't want you doing any more violation of Shabbat than you absolutely need to do. Chamim Amim, Achiev Shitet Kulo. Chamim say you strip the whole thing down, you flay the whole thing down. Now there's a clear tension over here. The tension is from two perspectives. One perspective is that when you flay an animal and leave the skin on, but just cut it up to a point, that's usually the way you leave an nevela. That's not the way that you treat something that you're going to either eat or something that's kodesh. So then it's, again, a sense of denigration of hektesh because you're doing that. The other nuance that's here between them is the question of, generally, when we have tchiyat Shabbat for these items, do we say it's dchuya or is it hutra? Dchuya means we try to minimize the amount of chilul Shabbat. You have a right to do it, but you have to do it in the most minimalistic way possible, that Shabbat is dchuya against these mitzvot. Then you could claim that Shabbat is hutra. Whatever it takes, you do. Doesn't really matter. You don't have to minimize. Shabbat is almost irrelevant with regards to the processing of this item. Obviously, if it's unnecessary, we're not going to let you do it. As long as it's necessary, you can do whatever melacha that you need to do. So both of those play into this machloket, both with regards to the hefshet and with regards to the making of the omer. Tosafot points out that this question is just as relevant by any of the korbanot at Tzibor, not just by Pesach. And then before he brings three different reasons why the Gemara here focuses on Pesach with regards to this. Nagat Pesach l'rebuta. They brought the Gemara to Pesach as a chiddush. Da'apo pi sheish psachim rubim. Even though there are tons of psachim lying around, nirin mutalim kenevela. And they would look like they're mutal kenevela. Still over here, Rabbi Shmuel says that you can't cut any more than that. Inami mishim rebuta derabonon. Maybe the chiddush is of the rabbonon. Da'afilu l'tzorach yachid heitiru. In the other cases, they are tzorach kavor, tzorach hakohanim. Over here, the flaying is only for the tzaruch of the yachidim, for the individual who brought the korban. So their chiddush is, despite that fact, we still are matir on Shabbat. Inami, davka b'pesach shoru rabbanan. Only by the Pesach did the rabbanan allow it, because the ikur korban of Pesach is brought for the achila. And therefore, flaying it off to get the basar to be okay is important. So therefore, we allow it to facilitate the eating of the korban Pesach later, which is the most important aspect of the korban of Pesach, unlike other korbanot. So now the Gemara says, "Mi lo amar Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka hatam, ko'echad efshar lo tarchinan." Just like over there, he says, wherever it's possible, we don't do extra tircha. Hachinami came into efshar lo tarchinan. So do like over here. Wherever you don't have to, we don't do it. We try to minimize the amount of chilul Shabbat that is done. Mi mai? How do you know the two are similar? Dilma adkam lo kamar Rabbi Shmuel hocha el deleka bizayon kodoshim. Over here, where you minimize it, there's no bizayon kodeshim. V'hatam deika bizayon kodeshim. Over there, where you're leaving it like a nevela, half cut open, im elecha k'rabbanan sphirle. Maybe you'll agree with the rabbanan over there. So again, that's what I mentioned to you before. There seem to be two driving forces over here. It seems to be the question of Shabbat hutra, Shabbat dukhuya, as well as the issue as to whether what you're doing is appropriate in the world of hektesh. And so that's why we're suggesting now that our Rabbi Shmuel in the Mishnah here may not subscribe to Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, because there's an additional factor that you need to consider, which is Bizayon Kodoshim. Maybe that's not acceptable. Inami, or vice versa. Adkan lo kamar Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, atam eladit aved leit sorech gavoa. That's because whatever you needed to do for a gavoa is done. Velo sorech achulei Shabbat. And therefore you don't have to continue with the chilul Shabbat. you can get what you need without being mechalo Shabbat anymore, which is you get the fats internally, you can get them out once you cut up to that point. So that's why he says, do that and no more. Over here, where you're not really helping out what we need for hektesh, mitzarech lachule Shabbat, and therefore you have to violate Shabbat, let us say that he holds like the Rabbonon. Now the truth is that Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbi Yochanan ben Berokhia does not necessarily agree with the Chachamim, because the Chachamim actually agree with Rabbi Shmuel that you only have to do three sa'ah on Shabbat. And over here we're trying to indicate that Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbi Yochanan ben Berokhia would say that you do even more. So there are two ways to deal with that. Rashi over here suggests that Eino Chanami, he holds like the Rabbonon, and the Rabbonon's position is actually that you can do three on a weekday, three on Shabbat, but that's because three is sufficient. That gives you what you need in the end. But if you needed to do more, you'd be permitted to do more. And so that's what it means that he holds like the Chachamim Neged Rabbi Shmuel, is that he thinks that you could have done more if you needed to do more, if that gave you a better outcome, or with Shvicha Milta, even though in this circumstance it happens to be that he agrees that you only need three sa'ah. The Shita Mekubetzet, on the other hand, in Ut Aleph, says that he actually disagrees with the Chachamim here. Chachamim here say you do three sa'ah on both Shabbat and Chol. So what does it mean that he's like the Chachamim? He agrees with the Chachamim that we don't differentiate between Shabbat and Chol. But Eino Chanami, he believes that we do five sa'ah. And that means that he thinks you do five sa'ah on Chol and five sa'ah on Shabbat, and disagrees with the Chachamim with regards to that, but agrees to them with regards to the matter that Shabbat and Chol are not differentiated. And that's what it means that he holds like the Rabbonon. Otherwise, you would have to say that when the Chachamim and the Mishnah say that you do three on Chol and Shabbat, they're not telling you the amount, but rather this issue that Chol and Shabbat are not differentiated. And even maybe they, the Rabbonon and the Mishnah, agree that you do it with five sa'ah. Their only point is that if that was sufficient to do it on the weekday, that's what you would do on Shabbat. But they really believe that you need five sa'ah. Because if you do it five, it's going to be much nicer, much easier, and you could probably end up with a finer solet of se'orim. So therefore, there, where the additional chilul Shabbat accrues to the benefit of Hekdesh, and it makes it nicer for Hekdesh, over there we'll condone more chilul Shabbat. By the Pesach, where they have sheit, is not for the benefit of Hekdesh, because the skins and everything about the animal is going to the Baalim. The only thing the Hekdesh needs is the fats, and you've already facilitated that. Once you facilitated that, there's no reason to go on with the chilul Shabbat. There's no benefit to Hekdesh in that way. So therefore, we can't say that they are the same opinion, or the same reasons are driving their opinions. You could differentiate and say that Rabbi Shmuel will have his position here and not hold like Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbi Yochanan ben Berokhia, and vice versa. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher Rabbi Yochanan ben Berokhia can have his position and not subscribe to the position of Rabbi Shmuel over here. Ella, the Gemara then will continue and try to speculate that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Hanina Skana Kohanim have the same opinion, and will continue to investigate who has a similar opinion to Rabbi Shmuel of our Mishnah. But we're going to stop here, six lines down on the top of Samach Daled Amud Aleph.